Welcome to the America's Workforce Radio Podcast, the flagship production of the American Workers Radio and Podcast Network, where organized labor and its never-ending fight to protect the rights of the American worker come first. Now, presented by LIUNA, Laborers International Union of North America, here's your host, Ed Flash Ferens.
Well, here's a switch, an airline merger that a union actually supports. More wins for organized labor will run them down. And today on the show, the question, is the Great Resignation a great exaggeration? A report from The Nation magazine and the North Coast Labor Federation turning dreams into reality. Welcome to the Thursday, May 19th edition of America's Workforce, where we are available on at least six platforms and growing: Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, Pandora, and Stitcher. Ann Larson is going to be our first guest on the show today. She is a writer and activist focused on economic justice, which is a subject we address a lot on this show. This, by the way, is our segment we do each and every month, usually on the third Thursday, with The Nation magazine. She's one of the many contributors to The Nation magazine, among other publications. Her work has appeared in The New Republic, The Chronicle of Higher Education, The LA Times. She writes primarily on education, debt, and low-wage work. And she's co-author of Can't Pay, Won't Pay, The Case of Economic Disobedience and Debt Abolition. And she's given many talks around the country on this subject, debtor activism, including Brooklyn College, Western University, UCLA, and the Harvard Medical School. And she's a part of an organization. You might want to check this out. EconomicHardship.com. EconomicHardship.com. And she talks about covering stories that the mainstream media often ignores. Their mission: to support independent journalists so they can create gripping stories, often countering the typical narratives. We then inject this high-quality journalism into the mainstream media to mobilize readers and change systems that are causing hardship, economic hardship for so many people. Interesting mission. Interesting lady. Now, the title of her article is The Great Resignation. Is it a great exaggeration? Workers are quitting their jobs in record numbers. We know that. But it's not a turning point for labor power. So with that being said, I figured we got to bring this lady on the show and talk about this. And in her article, she points out that the Great Resignation, you've heard that a million times by now, it is actually a phrase that was created by Anthony Klotz, an associate professor of management at Texas A&M University. He coined the term, and the media picked up on it for very good reason. A record 47 million workers quit their jobs last year. 47 million! According to the Washington Post, 4.5 million left their jobs in November alone, which is more than in any single month in the last 20 years. But Ann says there's something about the Great Resignation that just didn't sit with her. She was bothered by the way journalists hailed the trend as a sign of growing worker power. Here's the problem. Nothing changed in her workplace. Employees still struggle to make ends meet. The job was as physically brutal and mentally draining as ever. Now, keep in mind, this is going to take some time. We're seeing a lot of organizing, and we're going to touch on this with Ann. But there's been wins, there's been losses. A good example here is Amazon. 55% at the Staten Island facility, the warehouse there, JFK 8, as they called it. They voted for a union, but a couple of weeks later, at another warehouse, they knocked the union down by a 2-to-1 margin. So you got ups, you got downs, and the journalists are saying, oh my God, everybody is quitting their jobs, they're getting better jobs, they're making a whole lot more money. Some are. Some are. A lot of them are not. That's the problem. And she's going to talk about journalists and their income levels. This is quite fascinating. And she points out in her article that a lot of the journalists today come from Ivy League schools. So if you come from a prestigious university, how do you report on the working class? What do you know about blue-collar workers? Good discussion. Ann Larson's going to be our first guest. Davita Russell will be filling in for Pat Gallagher later in the show. And Davita, this is a woman with many hats. She heads the Coalition for Labor Union Women. She's a member of AFSCME, the Ohio Association of Public School Employees. She's a bus driver, Local 774. she's done it all. She's going to talk about a conference that's coming up in a couple of weeks. The Coalition of Labor Union Women is organizing their Ohio Statewide Women's Conference. This is going to be held June 3rd through the 4th. And attendees will take part in a meet and greet reception on Friday. And then there'll be a celebrity breakfast and a special celebrity guest, Kim Coles. That'll be on Saturday, June 4th, followed by a statewide women's conference. Melissa Cropper of the Ohio AFL-CIO. She is the secretary treasurer and also the president of the Ohio Teachers Union. She's going to be there along with the national president of CLU. Again, that's the Coalition of Labor Union Women. So she's going to discuss this conference, what it's all about, why they're doing it. Davita is also going to touch on voter suppression. We've seen that happen in a number of states. And of course, with the midterms coming up, that is a major concern. So Davita Russell filling in for Pat Gallagher on behalf of the North Coast Labor Federation segment that we do here on the show. The proposed merger between Spirit Airlines and Frontier Airlines received a boost this week as the Association of Flight Attendants, which is part of the CWA, the union representing flight attendants for both airline companies, announced full support for the merger after negotiating a, quote, merger transition agreement with Frontier Holding. That's Frontier's parent company, which would secure job, seniority, and contract protections for Spirit as well as Frontier flight attendants. Spirit and Frontier, two of the country's primary ultra-low-cost carriers, announced the proposed $6.6 billion merger in early February to become the nation's fifth-largest carrier, and the deal was affirmed by the Spirit Board of Directors earlier this month, though the proposal has generated some hostility among lawmakers and special interest groups. They've raised some antitrust concerns. Well, that always happens. Well, getting back to the agreement, the merger transition agreement says no merger will take place until a joint collective bargaining agreement has been negotiated and ratified, that no flight attendant may be furloughed as a result of the merger process, and the maintenance of all seniority rights, an agreement which the union insists affirms the merger will benefit flight attendants. So that's certainly good news. Now, there is one cog in the wheel here. The merger remains far from being settled. Why? Because this week, JetBlue Airways leapfrogged into this debate, and they launched a hostile takeover bid for Spirit. So they get the two sides together. The unions are happy, and all of a sudden, bingo, another party comes in here and may upset the apple cart. So we'll keep you posted on that one. In the meantime, we got continued labor unrest at Apple as they continue to try to organize. This is out of Atlanta now. So the store there has filed an unfair labor practice charge against the company. This happened on Tuesday, accusing the company of violating Section 8A1 of the National Labor Relations Act by holding captive audience meetings, which right now are legal. But as we have reported on the show, Jennifer Abruzzo, the general counsel for the labor board, labeled such meetings as a license to coerce and an anomaly in labor law and wants the board to outlaw them altogether. Now, that's a process that's unraveling now. The unfair labor practice charge was filed by the Communication Workers of America, the union which is attempting to organize that store in Atlanta, which last month became the first Apple retail shop to petition for a union representation election and has since been followed by several others. In NLRB news, Angie Cowan-Hamada, an attorney for over 15 years with the Chicago-based labor side law firm Allison Slutsky and Kennedy, was appointed on Monday to serve as the regional director for the NLRB's Region 13 office located in Chicago. Cowan-Hamada is described as a brilliant labor lawyer who has dedicated her career to protecting workers' rights. And she also worked for Unite Here prior to going to law school. So that's a nice addition to the labor board. We like that. And some labor news here. The Writers Guild of America East and the Writers Guild of America West ratified on Friday of last week a new collective bargaining agreement covering approximately 260 news writers, producers, graphic artists, desk associates, and others at CBS News. They signed a 3-year contract containing significant wins for the workers. Comment here from Lowell Peterson. Lowell is the executive director of the Writers Guild of America East, and he said, "Because our members at CBS News mobilized and made their voices heard, we won a solid contract that not only raises pay, but includes a hefty boost in pension contributions, increases fees, and also makes huge gains, transformational gains, as he put it, for longer-term temporary employees, along with severance pay and parental leave." Yeah, they got it all. As he put it, in a challenging environment, we were able to make real gains. So hats off to the workers there at CBS News. And one more here, employees at Impact Justice have overwhelmingly voted to form a union with the office and professional employees. This would be Local 29, joining thousands of nonprofit employees across the country, represented by OPEIU's Nonprofit Employees United Group. They call themselves NEU. And I see a lot of this happening with the nonprofits. Their union is called Impact Justice United, and they sought voluntary recognition from the nonprofit's leadership in February. But after management's concerted attempts to stall and disrupt the process, the bargaining unit filed for an election with the NLRB and overwhelmingly won by a vote of 23-3. Talk about solidarity. All right, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, our segment with The Nation magazine, Ann Larson will be joining us back in a few minutes.
This is America's Workforce.
It takes LIUNA to build North America's infrastructure. From roads and bridges to schools and skyscrapers, the men and women of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, build the projects we depend on. From constructing the Freedom Tower on the site of the former World Trade Center to untangling Washington, D.C.'s congested interstate, LIUNA members do the work that matters. Find out what it takes to be built by LIUNA at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
The United Auto Workers are one of the largest and most diverse unions in North America, with members in virtually every sector of the economy. Learn more about this proud sponsor of our program at UAW.org.
The Heat and Frost Insulators and Allied Workers are proud to be a title sponsor for America's Workforce Radio. The Insulators Union is leading the way in the mechanical insulation industry, fire stopping, and infectious disease control. Regarded as North America's energy conservation specialists, these professionals are known for their professional work and dedication. You can learn more about the Insulators Union at insulators.org.
America's Workforce is sponsored in part by Boyd Watterson Asset Management, LLC. Find out more about our investment solutions tailored to meet the needs of Taft-Hartley funds at boydwatterson.com.
Now, back to America's Workforce. Here's Ed Flash Ferens.
And remember, you can check us out on Facebook and follow us on Twitter. Twitter handle, real simple, AWF Union Podcast. And don't forget, we have a revamped website where all of our shows are archived going back years. And you can check that out at awfpodcast.com. awfradio.com still works, but we're pushing everything to the podcast because everybody's listening to podcasts today. It makes a whole lot of sense. By the way, this next segment
Brought to you in part by the United Labor Agency. They always connect people with employment, good employment, with proper wages and good benefits. You can find more at ulagency.org. Let's go to Salt Lake City, Utah right now. And joining us on line number one, and this is our segment we do each and every month, with one of the great reporters, writers of The Nation magazine. And that person today is Ann Larson, and she's been a contributor not only to The Nation, but also The New Republic, The Chronicle of Higher Education. And she's here to talk about her latest piece in The Nation called The Great Resignation is a Great Exaggeration. We'll get to that in a minute, but first we got to find out a little bit more about Ann Larson. Ann, welcome to the show. Thanks for joining us today.
Hi, thanks for having me. It's great to be here.
So you have an organization, and it's called economichardship.com. And I know you're an activist, you're a writer, you focus on social issues. I mean, there's a lot of things, the mainstream media, and we're going to talk about the elite media. I'll get to that later in the show. But there's a lot of things they don't cover. I take it that's what this is all about, economichardship.com. Can you give me some details on that?
Yeah, the Economic Hardship Reporting Project is an organization that supports independent journalists like myself and many others. Often journalists from working class backgrounds who didn't come up through the typical elite channels to arrive in the journalism field. People who don't live on the coast, for example, who live in other parts of America have stories that we want to get out there, have stories that they want to get out there that typical mainstream media doesn't always cover. So economichardship.org is the website where a lot of that work is put in kind of a clearinghouse so you can see it. And a lot of what the organization does is stories on economic hardship, on people struggling to get by. And what you'll often see is writers that are challenging the typical narratives that you get in the mainstream media. So, for example, we'll talk about later, my piece on the Great Resignation tries to do that. It's a great organization. People should check it out, economichardship.org. It's really about funding journalists who don't come from elite backgrounds, and it's really important that work continue. So thanks for bringing that up.
And how long have you been doing this, Ann?
I've been associated with EHRP just for a few months. Yeah. It's a great opportunity for me. And I've written before and published in other outlets, but EHRP is a great supporter of my work. I'm thrilled to be part of what they're doing.
Well, let's talk about your background. It's important for a writer to come from a working class family to know working class issues. And that's what this show's all about, because we zero in on wages and benefits and what has happened to America with corporate takeovers and these hedge funds that run coal companies today and media conglomerates. I mean, Wall Street has destroyed pretty much the fabric of America today. But what about your background, Ann?
Yeah, so I'm the child of public school teachers. Both my parents are public school teachers, and my grandpa, on my father's side was a builder. He built houses. He's a kind of working class background, public servant background. And I myself, I've gone back and forth like a lot of people. I've had went to college at the University of Utah. I've had some professional class jobs where I've done more like desk work and white collar work. And I've gone back and forth between that and more working class jobs, which is what I wrote about in the Nation piece. So I've got a lot of experience kind of in both arenas, which I think has given me a unique perspective. But yeah, solid background of public school teachers. And I actually grew up in the state of Idaho, and then went to school in Utah. So.
Oh, that's a real interesting state right now. Have you been following the politics there?
A little bit, yeah. It's an interesting part of the country, not for good reasons all the time, but
No, not at all. I'm not going to get into that. Let's talk about your latest piece here. The Great Resignation is a Great Exaggeration, and the subtitle is Workers Are Quitting Their Jobs in Record Numbers, But It's Not a Turning Point for Labor Power. Now, I want to get into that because we are seeing a lot of organizing going on right now. I know
you're watching that with Amazon, with Starbucks, and there's a slew of it going on. In fact, the data from the NLRB shows there's like a 57% uptick in organizing in the last 6 months, and it seems to be continuing on since they took that that poll number. But your article, so the Great Resignation, we're hearing millions and millions and millions of people are quitting their jobs because, well, they're not getting proper pay. They're not getting the right benefits. They were getting sick on the job during the pandemic. So you have a little different viewpoint on that? What's your perspective, Ann?
Yeah, first of all, a lot of people are quitting their jobs. I think that that's true. 47 million people quit in 2021. And in November of last year, 4.5 million quit in that month alone, which was more than in any single month in the last 20 years. So something is going on here. People are quitting their jobs. But, you know, I'm telling this story of the Great Resignation. My perspective on it is really rooted in my own experience. When this phenomenon started to get talked about a lot, I was actually working in a grocery store. I was managing the front end of a grocery store. I was a cashier and I was an assistant manager, essentially. So all this during the pandemic and after. And so as things began to, as this rhetoric of the Great Resignation started to ramp up, I was in a really good place to sort of judge what I was reading in the news, what journalists were saying, and to compare that with my own experience. And so at first, you know, I was really thrilled with the stories, right? The stories that we all heard in the media, that people were walking off the job, saying, take this job and shove it. There was a viral video that in some ways, you know, inaugurated the whole phenomenon of a Walmart worker, I think in Louisiana, who walked off the job. And before she did it, she got on the public address system at her store and gave, you know, and lectured the bosses and basically announced the entire store, customers included, what a crappy job it was and how mistreated she and her colleagues were. And it was sort of this thrilling moment. It was thrilling for me, too. And people were talking about it. And there were other stories of on Facebook and Twitter, people posting on TikTok. Whole genres were being invented, a genre called Quit Talk, where on TikTok people would post their quitting story. And so for a while, I was really excited about this and enthusiastic about it. There was lots of people in jobs like mine at grocery stores and Walmart and Target and fast food restaurants, sort of taking matters into their own hands, if you will. And it was kind of thrilling to see. And the numbers, you know, seemed to bear it out. As I just mentioned, people were quitting. There were statistics that backed this up. But at the same time, you know, I had something in the back of my mind that was saying, you know, this doesn't seem quite right. I keep going to work every day. I keep showing up and everything is the same. And, you know, I'm not seeing a big change. I'm not seeing a big shift in the relationship between the owners and the staff. Nobody's really getting significant raises. And yet I would go home and turn on Facebook or log into Facebook and see a very different narrative. So that's sort of what prompted me to start researching what was really going on to write this article. And then an incident happened in my store that solidified sort of my feelings about it. I don't know if you want me to talk about that.
Yeah, definitely get into that for me. Go ahead.
Cool. So one night in November, so it was around Thanksgiving, when grocery stores are very, very busy, extremely intense time of year for us. And I was there, I was managing. And one of the baggers, she was relatively new and in her 20s. She was bagging, and this was like maybe 3 or 4 hours into the shift. And she walked up to me and she said, you know, she wasn't happy with her schedule. She'd been scheduled at a time when she didn't want to come in and had informed management that she didn't want to come in. And they'd scheduled her anyway, and she was upset. And so she said, I've been scheduled this time, and I can't work this time. And I said, I'm sorry, you know, that's not up to me. I don't make the schedule. I'm sorry. I'm sure that if you call the scheduling manager tomorrow, she will try to give you what you want. And this woman was very, you know, she was very animated. She wanted me to know that she was upset. She said, well, because my schedule hasn't been respected, I'm walking out right now. And she took out her, you know, took off her apron and made a dramatic kind of exit. And, you know, all that it really meant for me at the time was I looked over and I saw that the cashier for whom she had been bagging now no longer had a bagger. And the lines were getting long. And so I'm worried now about this cashier who doesn't have any help. And I have to find someone else to help or go help myself. And it's become you know, it's just given those of us who are still there more work. And so on that night, I really started to think, okay, is this it? I asked myself, is this the great resignation? When somebody, because it looked exactly like many of the stories that I had seen online and heard of people walking out, taking matters into their own hands. And yet, when it happened to me, it didn't seem like a brave or heroic act on her part. It just seemed like, you know, obviously she was well within her rights to do it, but it didn't make any difference for those of us who were left there. In fact, it made our evening a little more difficult.
Yeah.
And that's when that was sort of the impetus for the article.
I see. Yeah. Yeah. Nothing changed. I mean, you know, it got
nothing.
Media
yeah.
play. I mean, a lot of times when people get sensational, it goes viral, and then it kind of peters
right.
out. And that's where we are today. Yeah. The great resignation.
Yes, exactly.
A great exaggeration. Yes. And I got to take a quick break here. Ann Larson joining us. And this is our segment we do each and every month with The Nation magazine. Later in the show, we'll be checking in with Davita Russell. She's filling in for Pat Gallagher on behalf of the North Coast Labor Federation. Back in a few minutes.
You're listening to America's Workforce with Ed Flash Ferens.
It takes LIUNA to power North America with affordable energy. The men and women of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, have the skills needed to build and maintain oil, natural gas, nuclear, solar, and wind projects that are shaping America's energy future. From new energy tech to retrofitted facilities, LIUNA members do it all. Find out what it takes to be powered by LIUNA at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
America's Workforce is being brought to you in part by the Communication Workers of America.
From the Golden Gate Bridge to the St. Louis Gateway Arch, the Sears Tower, and just about every building, bridge, and structure in between, our cities and towns wouldn't be the same without iron workers. With over 3,000 contractors employing more than 130,000 highly trained iron workers and 20,000 apprentices, the Iron Workers Union stands ready and able to shape the future of our skylines. Learn more at ironworkers.org. Iron Workers, the sky's the limit.
American workers are the best in the world, but we face an uphill battle against countries like China that don't play by the rules. There's a bill right now in Congress that would give American workers the trade tools we need to fight back and win. Join me in telling Congress to pass this bill. Visit AmericanManufacturing.org to learn how.
Paid for by the Alliance for American Manufacturing.
Now, back to Ed Flash Ferens with America's Workforce.
And don't forget, you can check us out on at least six platforms, and that includes Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, Pandora, and Stitcher. And when you get an opportunity, just sign up, receive our shows on a regular basis, and give us a rating. And we do appreciate all those five-star ratings, so keep them coming. Let's go back to our live line. Joining us today is Ann Larson. This is a segment we do each and every month with The Nation magazine, one of their writers, and she is a writer and activist focused on education, debt, and low-wage work. There's a lot of debt and a lot of low-wage work out there. And I want to talk about your article here. Yeah, and you cite some numbers here from the Brookings Institution. A record 44% of U.S. workers have low-wage jobs, and this was in March of 2020, with nearly one-third living below the poverty line. In the meantime, the employers, they were doing pretty good. I know some of the, especially the wealthy people, got even wealthier during the pandemic. But can you speak to that? I mean, how do we continue in America with 44% of U.S. workers with low-wage jobs? How can that continue, Ann?
Yeah, that's a really good question. It really can't. 44% of workers have low-wage jobs, nearly one-third below the poverty line. And this is happening during a period, 2020-2021, while employers are flush with cash. I mean, I think it's important that we look at these two phenomena, you know, together. We know from a 2021 report that companies in the S&P 500 posted the highest profit margin since 2008. This was in 2021, right?
Mm-hmm.
They even exceeded Wall Street's expectations, right? And especially fast food companies that employ a lot of low-wage workers like McDonald's and Chipotle, they had a windfall during 2020 and 2021. And what did they do with that money? They bought back their stock, They did cash buybacks to investors. And so, you know, the rich got richer, the low-wage workers stayed low-wage workers. Nothing really changed. And so this was happening. And then you also have the CARES Act, right, which happened in 2020, which was essentially a corporate bailout, right? So you've got workers who have a few benefits from that, a little stimulus checks, things like that. But what you've really got over the pandemic, over the last couple of years, is a wealth transfer to the top. And at the same time, you've got 44% of U.S. workers living on low-wage jobs and one-third living in poverty. I just think it's important to put those two sort of realities together. What we really have is two different Americas, people living in different worlds. And, you know, you mentioned before about all the organizing that was happening at at Amazon and at Starbucks and other stores, and that's just thrilling. It's thrilling. It's very exciting. It's exactly what we need. At the same time, we've still got a labor participation rate of about 10% in the U.S. So we've got a long way to go. There are positive signs that labor is gaining ground and support for labor unions is at a record high. But we've got a long way to go. And I'm hoping that the stirrings at Amazon and Starbucks go a lot further, because these two worlds that we live in got millions and millions of low-wage workers and a few sort of elites who are just raking in cash. That's just no way to run a society, and it has to change.
Yes, sadly, with the organizing that's going on, and there's been a number of strikes. You probably heard about Striketober and then Strike November of last year and Strike December.
Exactly.
We're not seeing so many this year, although some contracts are coming up at the end of this year. I am familiar with that. But sadly, the wages are not keeping up. We've got like 8% inflation right now. So you're lucky if you get 4% or 5%. Of a pay raise. So you can't even keep up with inflation. That's the sad part about this. But yeah, hopefully the organizing will continue, because there's a lot of frustration. We had the heroes pay. You probably remember when the heroes pay came out. You got like I think it was Kroger for one. They gave like $2 an hour extra. But how long did that last? A couple of months? Was it something
just
like that?
A few months. And it ended with virtually no outcry. You know, I mean, here we're, you know, I worked in a supermarket during the pandemic. We risked our lives so people could stay fed and get their groceries. And then, you know, the essential workers, it was almost like, well, that's over now. The brief wage hike was gone. And it just, my concern is that we relied on those people, on me and people like me, for that 2 year period. And now it sort of feels like we've forgotten what they did and our sacrifice. And I'm really hoping that we don't, right? I'm really hoping there's still time to reckon with what folks in those essential roles did, and to make sure that they're rewarded accordingly. And fair wages is the least we can do.
And if you don't mind, I want to talk a little bit about the lack of outrage out there. And I grew up in the 60s and the 70s. I mean, you saw the civil rights movement, workers' rights movement, and unions were really strong in the 50s and 60s, and it cascaded downward, especially after Reagan fired the air traffic controllers. But if you go back to that time, and I don't know how much you studied history, you saw a lot of protests. I mean, Martin Luther King. Mm-hmm. Millions of people in Washington, and that moved the needle. Doesn't seem to be happening today. I mean, there's a lot. You mentioned 44% of workers in low-wage jobs living below the poverty level. How come they're not speaking out? Do you have any opinion on that?
Yeah, I mean, I can only go off my own experience, right, having worked these jobs. What I really think, there's a sense of resignation out there that is really profound and really troubling. People are tired. Many of the folks that I worked with at the supermarket had more than one job to make ends meet. You've got one job that's really physically exhausting, mentally draining, and then maybe you have a second that you go to after that one's done. There's just not a lot of time left in the day for organizing and for protesting and for marching. I think that we're at a point where a lot of those folks, that 44%, are exhausted and resigned. Not all, Right. We see some, you know, like at Amazon, for example, those jobs are incredibly physically exhausting and long hours, et cetera. So you do see some of that, but there's a high turnover in these jobs. I mean, at the supermarket I worked at, it was virtually a new staff every month, right? New people coming in and out. It's very hard to organize in conditions where you're not even talking to the same people on a regular basis. It's always somebody new who's just catching up. So in a way, you know, what the corporate elites have done is they've created really bad jobs at low wages that people have to have in order to put food on the table. And those conditions themselves contribute to a situation that makes organizing and activism really hard, if not impossible. And so, yeah. You know, I don't have a solution to this, but I think that if that is the problem and we need to try to work together, you know, progressives, people on the left, try to figure out, you know, what actually do folks in my industry, in leisure and hospitality and grocery stores, what do those folks need? What kind of support can they do they need to actually do the work?
Right.
And I think that's a really good question.
Well, I hear a lot of employers saying, oh, yeah, we've got openings. Nobody's taking them. And then the worker comes back and says, well, yeah, I got several jobs. I got three jobs. And in order to pay the bills that one job used to pay for. I mean, that's the world right. That we live in today. I want to switch gears here a little bit. We talked briefly about the media elite. And it's so good that we're having this conversation because you have working class roots. Public schools, you worked in a grocery store, but you're on the front lines. You know what people go through, what blue-collar workers go through. So when it comes to when you say something like media elite, would you say the majority of our media today, they do not come from a working-class background? Is that how you view it?
That is correct, and it's not a guess. There's actual statistics backing that up. The people who report our news are from privileged backgrounds. They just are. One 2018 study showed that nearly half of journalists employed at the Washington Post and the New York Times, so the two, you know, paper of record and Washington Post, the two main media outlets in the nation, nearly half of those journalists attended elite universities. And 20% attended an Ivy League college. So one out of five of the journalists at those institutions, you know, went to Harvard, Yale, or somewhere like that. You know, other studies have shown that journalists, they live in New York and L.A. and maybe a couple of places, and that's it, in Washington, right?
Yeah.
They don't live in other parts of the country. And so it makes sense. They're not covering those stories. They don't live in those communities. They don't know those folks. And they have... They're elites that have been, they're sealed off in their urban elite bubbles. And this is a big problem. I think this is one of the reasons the story of the Great Resignation was hyped to the degree that it was, is it's the story of heroic victory or heroic, like brave actions taken by individuals, right? The story of individual heroes and not of collective action, not of organizing, not of bargaining, not of taking on the boss. You know, as a group. And those are the stories that we need to hear, and we need to learn how to actually do that. But what elite media is interested in is like individual stories of heroism. And I think that is largely explained by the class status of the people that write the news.
And when you read stories from the Washington Post and New York Times, I mean, those are major publications, and obviously their believability is far up there. So if they report it, it must be true. I mean, this is what's going on.
Right.
That's the media landscape. Now, let me throw this at you. There's a lot of digital platforms, smaller publications, a lot of organizing going on in those smaller publications that are definitely more working class. Do you think that might bode well for the future, Ann? What's your thoughts?
I mean, I don't know. I think the record's out. I mean, like, as we mentioned before, organizations like Economic Hardship are trying to get more voices into the media that come from working class and non-elite backgrounds. Podcasts such as this one. I think there's a lot of independent media that people are turning to for alternative perspectives and to find community. But I honestly think the power of the mainstream media organizations like the Washington Post and the New York Times you know, NBC News on TV, those should not be discounted. They are still major power operators in our society. They still have a major role in telling people what's going on, what to think, in shaping perspective. While I think we should be really excited about alternative media and we should do all we can to support it and to create it, until those mainstream organizations change, right, until they welcome more voices from other backgrounds, you know, I think that we're not going to get very far.
Yeah, yeah. There's big names out there, NBC, CBS News. I mean, they once dominated the market when there was no internet. The internet's changed everything. Social media's changed everything. But they are still dominant players, and they need a working class touch to their news. There's no question about that. Anne, you're a great guest. Thank you so much for joining us today. We're speaking with Anne Larson, and she is one of the contributors to The Nation magazine. She also has appeared in New Republic, the Chronicle of Higher Education. And we're talking about The Great Resignation is a Great Exaggeration. And the website you want to go to is economichardship.com, economichardship.com. Do check that out. Anne, thank you so much for joining us. Let's keep in touch. We do a lot of guests on this show.
I'd love
we
to.
Try to focus on the issues that economic hardship is all about. So let's keep rocking and rolling, okay?
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
All right. Well, when we come back, Davida Russell will be joining us. Davida heads the Coalition for Labor Union Women. She's going to talk about a conference called Turning Dreams into Reality. Back in a few minutes.
This is America's Workforce. More shows available at awfradio.com.
It takes LIUNA to keep America running. Over 70,000 public employees are part of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, delivering critical services such as health care and emergency response, as well as maintaining roads and sanitation systems. Even the National Postal Mail Handlers Union, representing over 47,000 U.S. postal workers, is affiliated with LIUNA. Find out what it takes for LIUNA to keep America running at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
There is unity and strength for workers.
We are the USW.
We are the USW.
The United Steelworkers.
The largest industrial union in North America.
We represent 850,000 members in the U.S., Canada, and the Caribbean.
We work in metals,
rubber,
chemicals,
paper,
oil refining, atomic energy, and the service sector.
We are steelworkers, standing strong and fighting for what's right.
This segment of America's Workforce is brought to you by Survey and Ballot Systems. SBS has been providing unions with secure and flexible election options for over 30 years. Visit surveyandballotsystems.com to learn more.
Now, back to America's Workforce. Here's Ed Flash Ferens.
And don't forget, you can check us out on Facebook and follow us on Twitter. Twitter handle AWF Union Podcast, AWF Union Podcast. Before we get to Davida Russell here, I want to do a shout out here for the Letter Carriers Union. This past weekend on Saturday, they staged the 30th annual Stamp Out Hunger Food Drive. We promoted it here on the show. And from what I gathered, it was a huge success. And this is the first time in a couple of years since 2019 that they were able to do it due to the pandemic. Fred Rolando is the head of the Letter Carriers Union, and he is thanking all the millions of families across the country who participated because the need is out there. No doubt about that. The need is out there, especially with the food prices escalating the way they are. So thank you if you took part in the annual, almost annual, Stamp Out Hunger Food Drive. And they had support from the Food and Commercial Workers Union, the AFL-CIO, United Way, the Postal Service, CVS Health, Valpak, and Kellogg's, along with the National Rural Letter Carriers Association. Good job by all there. All right, let's go to line number two right now. And joining us, haven't had this lady on for a while. She is one very, very busy woman. And she's going to get busier in a couple of weeks because she's putting together a conference titled Turning Dreams into Reality. And joining us is Davida Russell, who heads the Coalition of Labor Union Women. in northeastern Ohio, and she's got an event here that she's going to spell out, and hopefully you can take part in. Davida, how are we doing today, my sister?
I am wonderful. How are you, Flash?
Good, good, good. And we should point out that Davida is, well, she's affiliated with AFSCME, the Public School Employees Union. The local, and I stand corrected here, is it 744? Is that right?
Now it's 110.
110, okay. It's all changing. All right, okay, okay. And she's also a councilwoman in Cleveland Heights, Ohio. So I don't know where you find time to even sleep, but let alone put together a conference. Let's get into this. What's going to be happening on June 3rd and June 4th? Go ahead.
Well, we're going to have Women's Revolution, Turning Dreams into Reality Women's Conference statewide. That's going to be happening at the DoubleTree downtown Cleveland at 1111 Lakeside Avenue. And we have a powerhouse panelist, as well as comedian and actress Kim Cole, who's going to be our celebrity breakfast keynote speaker. We have our Supreme Court justices, our state reps, our council people. We have some people who have had their own businesses or started their own businesses. We have national labor leaders coming in from around the country, as well as Ohio AFL-CIO Secretary Treasurer Melissa Cropper. So we have a bang-up conference plan for statewide women in Ohio.
And Davida, what's the purpose here? What are you going to discuss?
Well, we're going to have four panelists, and each panel has something different to bring to the audience. The first panel is our international labor leaders, and their focus is to give us a path of how did they get where they got today in the labor movement, where we all know that women are not as prominent in the labor movement as men. And one of CLU's mission is to help women to aspire to become leaders in their union, as well as run for political office, as well as legislate and protect the right of women. So they're going to give us a pathway of how, what happened in their lives, what avenues that they go through to get to be national labor leaders. The next panel will be around people of color, women of color, who are going to give us information on the racial barriers and the cultural barriers that they had to cross to get in the position of where they are today. The next panel is our young rising stars, which is we are the real deal. These are young women 40 and under who have said, I'm not waiting for a table up or waiting for a chair at the table. We're kicking down the door and taking our place. We are building the table.
We
want to know how to support them and move them forward, and how did they get where they are in such a young age in their lives. And then the last panel is our legislators and our Supreme Court judges, to give us a focus on creating the women's agenda. We want to leave there with at least three issues that all women around Ohio within the labor movement and outside of the labor movement can legislate and move forward as issues that are affecting primarily women in the unions and around the country.
So this is all going to happen at the DoubleTree Hotel, which is in downtown Cleveland, and it's a two-day conference, June 3rd and 4th. How are we doing on registration right now? And I'm going to give the number to those of you listening that might want to attend. Where are we right now? And maybe can you speculate how many people you think might be there?
Well, we have already maxed out of our hotel rooms. I've increased that booking twice. And the hotel will not allow us to open our book slot again. So if anyone's coming and need a hotel room, you have to pay the full price. Our registration is going very well. I will be turning in my count on Tuesday the 24th, and we're just about sold out. We're just about
booked.
So we may
awesome.
Have we may have maybe a few openings. but I'll check that when I get there. Because of COVID, we didn't want to have 200-300 people. We're trying to max out about 125, and I think we're there almost. And Friday night is going to be the party night, so that's from 7 to 10. So if people want to come and join us and party with us, that would be great. On Saturday, we're wearing all white. You don't have to be dressed up. We want this to be a casual, relaxed atmosphere, but we want to honor our new Supreme Court Justice, Justice Jackson, who was just appointed to the Supreme Court. So we're wearing white to honor that. Piece of information and the justice who just was appointed.
Davida, I want to talk to you about leadership and the women that are involved in leadership. As you know, in the past year, a female is the president of the AFL-CIO. I'm talking about Liz Shuler, following the death. Yeah, following the death of Rich Trumka, which was in August of 2021. And she elevated, and she is actually, they're going to vote in June in a couple of weeks on continuing her leadership. Do you think that that has changed the dynamics for women to raise into leadership roles in labor?
Oh, most definitely. Liz Shuler is a phenomenal woman. She supports the Coalition of Labor Union Women. I believe with her leadership, we will get a real boost of support, as well as a push for more women to step out into a leadership role with her example and her courage. And her, she's just awesome. I know her very well. We're friends, and President Shuler is a great role model for other women to follow.
Yeah, no doubt about that. And like I said, I think it's June 12th through the 15th, the National Convention will be taking place in Philadelphia.
And yes, it's I'll pretty, be there.
You'll be there. I figured you would be.
Yes, I will be there.
Okay, one more question here. I know a lot of people are concerned about voting, and we've seen a number of states, state of Ohio included. I don't know if they've passed any laws yet, but there, a lot of folks are concerned about these voter suppression moves by lawmakers around the country. Probably about 17 to 21 states right now have actually passed such laws. Going forward, how do you feel about the midterm elections because of what's happening?
I think we really have our work cut out for us, because I think a lot of people are not aware of some of the elections that's coming up. Like we had an election here in May. Now we're going to have an election again here in August due to the redistricting. And then we're going to have another election in November. So I don't believe people are really aware of all of the elections that's coming up. And so we need to get on the ground and need to make sure we get people registered. But not only registered, we have to register those people, but we have to go back to those people and make sure we pull those people out to vote. So in June, I'm going to be launching a hip-hop voter registration bus that's going to go all over the city of Cleveland to try to get our young registered to vote through music and fun. So hopefully we'll be able to do our part under the Coalition of Labor Union Women, as the Ohio ACE, and as my council seat. I'm just putting all those hats into that voter registration since it's nonpartisan, to make sure that we can turn out as many registered voters as possible, but not only register them, but go back to them and ask them to vote.
All right, we're going to button it up there. Davida Russell joining us on our live line on behalf of the North Coast Labor Federation. She's also state president of the Coalition for Labor Union Women. Again, the conference is Turning Dreams into Reality. It's going to take place in downtown Cleveland at the DoubleTree Hotel June 3rd and 4th. You want to get some more information. She indicated it's pretty much at maximum capacity, but you can always squeeze a couple more folks in, and all you got to do is call this number, 216-409-2052. That's 216-409-2052. That's it for another edition of America's Workforce. Coming up tomorrow, the latest from the American Legion and the Alliance for Retired Americans. Until then, all of you have a safe and wonderful day.
That concludes another episode of the America's Workforce Radio Podcast. Thanks for listening, and be sure to subscribe so you never miss a show. America's Workforce is a production of Labor Tools and BMA Media Group. Find out more information online at labortools.com.